Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience. And they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs. And become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Today's episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark is brought to you by Skylark Media's new podcast, American Hysteria, and Audible. I'll be back after tonight's first story to let you in on a sneak peek of American Hysteria, and after the second to tell you a bit more about Audible and a special offer they have planned for my listeners this holiday season. Until then, snuggle up, turn down the lights, and brace yourself. The calendar may say Halloween is over, but for some of us, it never ends. Stay tuned. The show is about to begin.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyrie, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening. You're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 23. I'm your host, Otis Gyrie. In tonight's episode, I'll be performing five stories for you about fascinated felines, horror-strewn hallways, eerie effigies, subterranean secrets, and malevolent amusements. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. And thank you for your support. It's time to get started, so lock your doors, turn the lights down low, and settle in. The show is about to begin. Our first tale of terror this evening, from author James Colden, is entitled The Inexplicable Fascination of My Cat. September 21st, 2009. My wife called me from the breakfast table this morning to see something strange. I came out to the hallway where she was standing, and my eyes followed her pointing finger. There was my cat, poised,
and erect as an Egyptian statue, sitting just inches from the pale green wall, staring at it with an intensity undeserved by such an ordinary blank surface. The focused feline didn't even stir as I knelt down to see if there was anything, a bug maybe, that could have demanded his attention so completely. But that particular spot on the wall was as boring and clean a specimen as you'd find anywhere. I wondered if the cat's advanced senses had detected something, if something those occasionally twitching ears had heard, a mouse scurrying amidst the wiring behind the painted drywall. But I couldn't hear the telltale scratching, and so at last I decided it must be just another one of those strange habits that our feline friends delight in torturing us with. On my way to work, as I drove through a quaint little street lined with a variety of small shops and cafes, I passed a building that had been vacant for as long as I could remember. It had always stood dark and silent against the line of cheerful storefronts, and that's why I noticed the bright sign that hung in its otherwise empty window. The sign announced in elegant script and classical serif fonts the grand opening of a new art gallery on October 1st. My wife and I had long been pondering the idea of acquiring some pieces to decorate a few bland walls in our house, so I made a mental note to mention it when I got home. Work was boring, and as I sat at my desk, staring blankly at my computer screen and typing mindlessly, I felt a little like my cat staring at an empty wall. My cat was still staring at that unimportant spot on the wall when I returned this evening, although he had moved to the other side of the hallway, so that I felt like I was awkwardly intruding on a private conversation as I passed between him and his object of inexplicable interest. I told my wife about the art gallery, and she seemed delighted. We plan on attending the grand opening on the 1st. I think our cat's favorite wall will make an excellent display for whatever we come home with. October 1st, 2009. My cat is still enamored with that wall. But now there's something to hold my interest as well. After another boring day of work, I returned home to pick up my wife, and together we went to the new art gallery. For nearly an hour, we browsed works by a number of local artists, ranging from classical portraits to cubist still lifes. In the end, we settled on an abstract landscape of colorful shapes so distorted and mixed together that we really had no idea what it was supposed to depict. In vague title, Shadows of the Heavens, it did little to help us understand its meaning. But we liked it, so now it hangs in our hallway, and our cat's curious fascination, which has become a little unnerving, seems a little bit more justified. I say the cat's unusual habit is unnerving, but that's only true part of the time. During the day, it's just annoying, and I feel occasional urges to pick him up from his vigilant post and force him to just settle in my lap and relax. In fact, I've tried it several times, but even as he sits there purring under my caresses, he continues to stare straight in the direction of that wall, as though he can see through all the other barriers to whatever interested him. After he sets free, he returns to his strange sentinel duty, taking breaks only to eat and make use of his litter box. After the sun sets, however, his unblinking gaze makes me wary. When the house is full of shadows of the night, I find myself avoiding that hallway whenever I can help it. I have heard it said that animals can sense, if not see, things that we humans cannot, and though I consider myself a skeptic, I can't help but feel a bit nervous when I glance at that spot my cat finds so interesting. October 13th, 2009. Today did not begin well. Somehow, I managed to sleep through the obnoxious beep, beep, beep of my alarm and ended up rising groggily from my bed and a half hour late. I skipped breakfast, and as I ran for the door, my foot caught on something soft, sending me sprawling to the floor on my hands and knees. The cat, who had been examining the wall as usual, yelled in panic as it shot from under me like a bullet. I wanted to go after it and give the obsessed feline a good kick for bruising my kneecaps, but I was running late enough as it was, so instead I limped angrily out to my car. As the workday dragged slowly by, I could feel the tender purple spots blossoming where I had hit the ground, and every time I accidentally brushed my knees against my desk, a wave of pain rippled up and down my legs. So it was that by the time I returned home, I had not forgotten my grudge against our cat, and throughout dinner I kept throwing spiteful glares toward the hallway where it kept watch. There are times when I really don't understand. Wait, what was that noise? Later. Well, as I was saying, there are times when I really don't understand why we love cats. Just a few minutes ago, my wife and I were lying in bed, she reading her favorite book and me writing in this journal, when we heard a vicious, continuous hissing. We immediately recognized it as that of our cat downstairs, and we wondered what on earth could be upsetting him since we don't have any other pets. Suddenly, there was a tremendous crash, and an unearthly howl preceded the rapid patter of our cat tearing up the stairs and bolting into our room, a dark, fuzzy blur as he dashed under our bed. My wife insisted that I go down to check and see what had caused all the ruckus, and so, with no small amount of grumbling, I trudged down the steps. There lay our new painting, face down on the floor. With a frustrated groan, I bent down to check for any damage, and fortunately, especially for the cat's sake, all was well. I've had it with that cat and his annoying habits, and I don't know what I would have done with him had the frame been scratched or the glass protecting the painting cracked. After returning the artwork to its place on the wall, I went back to bed and explained everything to my wife, who seemed much more forgiving of our troublesome pet than I was. She says I just had a bad day and that when I wake up in the morning everything will be better. But I bet I'll come down those stairs to find our cat focused as intently as ever on that ordinary wall and it will drive me nuts. Anyway, tomorrow I plan on rehanging the painting more securely so that the cat can't knock it down again. October 28th, 2009. I wonder if I'm subconsciously beginning to believe those stories about the feline's sixth sense. At first, our cat's obsession with the wall was cute. Then it became annoying. Now it has morphed into nothing short of disturbing. In spite of the securest methods of hanging I could devise, the painting on that wall continues to end up on the floor. At first, it was just a couple times a week, but now we are awoken by its crashing every night. I've even given up replacing it and have, for now, simply leaned it on the floor against the wall, but it still is tipped over every morning. I continue to blame the cat's mischief, although my wife doesn't agree. She doesn't see how I can believe our pet managed to climb halfway up the wall without the aid of any furniture and left the relatively heavy work of art off its hooks. I think I know she's right, but I refuse to admit it. I'm afraid of what that might mean. The cat doesn't just stare at the wall anymore. He stalks it. He tries to frighten it. As he approaches, his pace slows. He cautiously places one paw perfectly in front of the other without making a sound, as though tiptoeing in order to sneak by. Then he arches his back, and his hair bristles like a porcupine. His eyes widen, green orbs glowing in the dark hallway, and his black slit pupils dilate into wild spheres. As we watch him transform, his throat rumbles with a low, gravelly whine. And at any moment, we expect him to spring at the pale green drywall and unleash the fury of his razor-sharp claws. Halloween is fast approaching, and tonight my wife and I brought home a pair of bright orange pumpkins and performed that annual ritual of festive dissection, transforming those innocent gourds into ghoulish monstrosities. They're sitting on the kitchen table right now, their wide grins flickering with the yellow light of the candles nestled within their hollow shells. On Halloween night, we'll set them in the hallway where trick-or-treaters will see them when we open the front doors to pass out candy. November 1st, 2009. Everything has changed for us. The only bright side now is that we still have each other. Let me explain. Halloween night, as trick-or-treating was coming to a close, my wife and I left our bowl of candy on the front porch with a note inviting any straggling candy seekers to help themselves while we went for a moonlight walk through the neighborhood to admire the graveyards, ghosts, and jack-o'-lanterns that adorned each and every house. I was breathing deeply the scent of seared pumpkin flesh when a fleet of fire engines, sirens wailing, and lights flashing sped past us. We looked to see where they were headed and saw rising above the rows of silhouetted homes a smoky orange glow. I felt the fist of fear close around my heart as I realized the firelight was emanating from the direction of our own house. So I grabbed my wife's hand and led her as fast as I could back to the way we had come. Looks of horror danced across our faces as we stood, illuminated in the flickering blaze that was once our home, feeling in the waves of heat the loss of every material possession and memory contained within that condemned building. We received our only scrap of good news that night when a fireman came running to us, clutching to his chest a dirty ball of quivering fuzz. Our cat smelled strongly of smoke. His whiskers were singed. He was terribly frightened, but otherwise, he was fine. I'm pretty sure he was responsible for the inferno that was devouring our home. I could see it playing out in my head as he rubbed it too hard against the lit jack-o'-lanterns perched precariously on the table in the hall, sending one tumbling to the floor where it shattered, releasing its tiny flame to grow as it feasted on our house. But now, I didn't care who was to blame. I was only glad our entire family was safe. The next morning, after a sleepless night in a cheap hotel, I returned to the desolation that was once our nest. There it stood, a blackened framework of splinters, a ghost of what it once had been, enough of it remaining that I could still trace the floor plan and wander from room to room, remembering what used to be. I chuckled cheerlessly to myself as I paused where my cat had once sat and stared at the wall, remembering how much it had annoyed me at the time, and then a stirring of the ashes at my feet caused me to look down. My toe nudged the spindly remains of the frame that had held Shadows of the Heavens. The painting itself was completely consumed, and the protective glass was warped and cracked by the heat. But then I saw something else behind the glass, framed in the remains of our painting. There, in the narrow space once occupied by that most intriguing wall, staring up at me with hollow sockets and an emotionless grin, was a charred and broken skeleton.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
I hope you enjoyed The Inexplicable Fascination of My Cat by James Colton. Sometimes it seems our feline friends know more than we think they do, and we'd be wise to investigate, or else curiosity might just kill more than the cat. Up next, we've got a terrifying tale about a corridor-creeping visitor from the dark side who just can't help but announce his presence. But first, I'd like to introduce you to American Hysteria, the latest podcast from Skylark Media, which explores our society's oft-told urban legends, conspiracy theories, and more, and why we end up believing in them. I'll return in just a minute with my own unbelievable tale to tell. See you on the other side.
American Hysteria is a brand new podcast from Skylark and me, Chelsea Weber-Smith. It explores our moral panics, urban legends, and conspiracy theories, how they shape our psychology and culture, and why we end up believing them. I'll cover moral panics like stranger danger, satanic panic, and Tinky Winky's homosexuality, urban legends like poison Halloween candy, and conspiracy theories like the Illuminati's secret plan for world domination. I was raised around a ton of wild conspiracy theories, and I know how easy it can be to freak out over the sensational, the rare, and the untrue. I want to understand why we fear the wrong things, and how these fears shape our past, present, and future in sometimes devastating ways, and also what these bizarre panics might be covering up. I promise to show you a good old time while I try to figure it all out. The first two episodes of American Hysteria drop November 12th. Head over and subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
As Chelsea mentioned, American Hysteria is available now wherever podcasts can be found, with the rabbit hole that is two brand new episodes waiting for you. So when you're finished with tonight's show, do yourself a favor and check the show. If you enjoy a good mystery, and who doesn't, I know you'll love it. And don't forget to leave them a kind word on social media or in your review, and let them know you heard about them from Otis Gyre. Now, double-check your doors and windows, and look under your bed, because I've got another sinister story waiting just around the corner. Don't say I didn't warn you. Our second tale of terror this evening from author J.J. Cheeseman is entitled The Sallow Man. Have you ever heard of the Sallow Man? That's what Timmy Morrison asked me in seventh grade. Timmy was my best friend. We did nearly everything together. It was Friday, and we were sitting in lunch period discussing what we were going to do when he came over to stay the night after school. "Now, what the hell is that?" I asked him, rolling my eyes, because I figured this was going to be another one of Timmy's stories that his sister told him. Timmy's face put on that look he'd always put on when he was talking about something that someone hadn't heard of before. "My sister told me about him. She said he comes to you if you say some words in front of a mirror. I don't remember it all, but I wrote it down what you told me. I figured we could try it out at your house." I rolled my eyes to make it seem like I thought it was childish, but in truth I was interested. Creepy stuff like that always interested me. Even though I knew it wasn't real, I just liked hearing the stories. I didn't want Timmy to know that I wanted to hear about it, though, because then he'd just have something to be smug about. "Is this just more of that Bloody Mary crap, where she just comes out of the mirror to kill you?" I asked him, pretending to pay attention more to my mashed potatoes than the conversation. "No! The Sallow Man comes out of the mirror after you recite his poem. Then he kills anyone you ask him to. That's what my sister said, anyway," Timmy said as he turned to eat his own tray. "There was a poem involved," I thought. Now I really did have to know more. "What do you mean, what poem?" I asked him. Timmy lazily reached into one of his many folders that he carried around for school and pulled out a piece of paper that was a bit crinkled. He slid it over to me on the cafeteria table, and I examined it without picking it up. This is what it read. "In dark halls, within the after,
From those halls, you hear my laughter. Dark thoughts entreat your mind. To four now break down my bind. I will take what ails you in this land, and I will leave no trace, for I am Sallow Man. I nearly laughed as I read the last lines. I was up for anything spooky, sure, but this was really corny. Timmy, you don't really believe this crap, do you? Your sister was probably just messing with you. Timmy didn't say anything at first. He just concentrated on his tray for a moment. Then he said, Brandon, do you remember last year when my parents were fighting a lot? My dad was drinking all the time, and I stayed over at your house nearly every night for a while. Of course I remembered that. Timmy was over at my house every night. My parents allowed it because they knew what was going on. It was a small town. Everyone did. Yeah, Tim, I remember. I said, the mood now solemn. My dad hit my mom a lot, and whenever me or my sister was home, he would call me a bastard and he would call my sister a whore. It was a nightmare. I could sense Timmy's gaze turn towards me, so I looked up from my tray as well. He stared at me for a moment, wanting for me to say something, so I did. I thought your dad stopped drinking, though, and everything was okay, I asked, trying to lighten the mood a bit. Timmy responded then, with anger starting to edge into his voice. Yeah, he stopped drinking, but nothing got better. Well, sure, he stopped hitting Mom, but she barely speaks to him or anyone else in the house anymore. I know it's because of him. I know she's still afraid of him. I was a bit shocked. Timmy had never mentioned anything about that before. I just figured once Timmy started staying at his house again, everything was fine. So what are you going to sick the Sallow Man on your dad? Timmy, that's nuts. It's just some story your sister probably heard from one of the other seniors, I told him. But what if there's a chance it would work? I need to try, Brandon, but I want you to be with me. Timmy looked dead serious. I don't know, Tim. It just seems silly, I told him. Please, Brandon. I need you there. Please. Timmy gave me a look of pure desperation, and I felt sorry for him. I decided that I'd be there to support him. He lived in a broken home, and he was grasping at straws. I knew it couldn't be good for him, but he was my best friend. What choice did I have? Okay, Tim, I got your back. Let's summon a ghost. The next thing I knew, it was after school, and Timmy and I had locked ourselves in my small downstairs bathroom at home. Do the lights need to be off or anything, I asked. No, at least I don't think so. I think all I have to do is recite the poem in front of the mirror, and then he appears. Timmy pulled out the piece of paper with the poem on it that he had in his back pocket, then cleared his throat. I stood back and leaned against the wall with my arms crossed. Usually when people did this sort of thing, it was in the dark, maybe with a lit candle or two, but the lights were on, and the floral wallpaper that was all around my bathroom didn't exactly inspire fear, so I felt pretty stupid in that bathroom with Timmy. I was just thankful Mom and Dad were still at work so they didn't catch us and wonder what was wrong with their son. Timmy finally began to speak after what seemed like minutes. In dark halls within the after, from those halls you hear my laughter. Dark thoughts entreat your mind, to for now break down my bind. I will take what ails you in this land, and I will leave no trace, for I am Sallow Man. Timmy spoke loudly and clearly. When he finished, he held his breath, waiting for something to happen. At that point, I was absolutely convinced Timmy was wasting his time. I sighed and closed my eyes, waiting for him to realize the same thing. I heard him gasp, which I took to be a sound of defeat. I opened my eyes and was about to console Timmy, but then I saw the real reason he made a sound. When I opened up my eyes, I saw the mirror no longer showed our reflections, but a long dark hallway. The hallway's floor, walls, and even its ceiling seemed to be moving, undulating back and forth like the insides of some giant worm. The hallway was poorly lit by some unseen source, and at the very end of it I could see the shape of what looked like a man moving toward the mirror. For a moment, I was stuck in disbelief. I couldn't move. I could only watch as the figure in the mirror came closer, and slowly, its features became clearer and clearer. It was a man, or what seemed to be a man, bald and completely naked. His skin was a pale, sickly yellow. He was skinny, so emaciated that his jaundiced skin was taut against his skeleton, and every one of his ribs were visible. With thin and lanky legs, he walked ever closer to the mirror with a shambling gait. His long, ghoulish arms dragged his knuckles along the hall as he walked, parting the undulating floor for a fleeting moment before the floor came back together. When I noticed this, I squinted my eyes to try and sharpen my vision in an attempt to see what it was that was making the floor and walls quiver like they were. The cause for the moving floor became clear as they started to move from within the mirror and out onto the bathroom. Cockroaches. The insects began to spill out of the mirror and onto the sink and floor below. That was enough for me. Timmy and I had to get out of that bathroom. I reached out for Timmy's arm and tried to pull him away, but he would not budge. He stood transfixed, his eyes glued to the mirror in the nightmare that was approaching. I tried a few more times to pull him away, shouting at him to snap out of it, but he wouldn't move. It was as if something unnatural was holding him in place and wouldn't let him go. I gave up and I turned tail, hauling ass for the door. As soon as I reached the door handle, thousands of cockroaches, moving impossibly fast, covered the handle and immediately after the door, leaving the door unobscured completely by writhing and hissing insects. I yelled, cursing and screaming as I turned around to go for the window on the other side of the bathroom. I was silenced when I was met with the sight of a room no longer recognizable as my bathroom, but was more reminiscent of that hallway in the mirror. The walls and ceiling was covered in insects. When I looked down, I saw that the roaches covered the floor below, making only two small spaces where my feet stood. I dared not move then. I don't know what would happen if I were to step on one of those bugs. I had the awful thought that if I were to move at all, the insects would strip my bones completely of flesh. I lifted my head slowly to the now dimly lit room. Flashes of light would strobe here and there as the roaches crawled along the light shade of the ceiling. I could see now that two yellow and gnarled hands had appeared on either side of the mirror, and I knew the sallow man had come. Timmy stood there, his eyes still wide, his stature still unmoved. I distinctly remember a smell then, a sickly smell that called to mind dirty bedpans. I had to cover my mouth and nose not to gag. Still, this didn't seem to bother Timmy whatsoever. When the awful smell came, so then did the sallow man's head emerge from the mirror. His bald head was faced downward, and his neck stretched far into the room until his head was inches in front of Timmy's face. A voice came then. A hissing voice that seemed to come from the insects and echo all around the room. "Who is the one to be taken to the after?" the voice said. Timmy moved then, for the first time since he recited the poem, by smiling a wide and unnerving grin. "My father," Timmy said, loud and clear, as if delivering the death sentence himself. In retrospect, I suppose he was. There was a murmuring sound then, as all of the insects began to vibrate loudly. Then after a moment, The insects parted and swarmed around the wall to the left of the mirror, and a man, who I recognized to be Timmy's father, rose from within the wall of swarming bugs. His face was pale and his eyes were wide with fear. The insects were swarming him, presumably pinning him to the wall. I'm sure he'd be screaming if the cockroaches weren't covering his mouth.
"This is the one to be brought into the after."
The awful hissing echo came again, entreating an answer from Timmy. And without breaking his grin, Timmy said, "Yes." As if heeding the call of Timmy's word, the insects then began swarming into Timmy's father's mouth. His eyes showed his desperate fear as thousands of cockroaches began eating him from the inside out. I would say it was gruesome, but the insects were quick with their work. They devoured every bit of Timmy's father within seconds, leaving nothing left. Had my eyes not been glued to what was happening, I might have blinked, and I would have missed it. I looked back to Timmy, who had a satisfied and almost relieved look on his face. But his look soon became one of terror as the Salaman spoke once more.
"Now, you will join me in the after, boy. Such is the price to be paid."
Timmy didn't move at all, save for the horrified shock that crawled over his face. I don't know if it was terror that kept it in place, or if it was the Salaman, but... oh man, I wish I didn't see what happened next. The Salaman lifted his head slowly, revealing a face that had no features. No eyes, no nose, and no discernible marks whatsoever as far as I could tell. The only thing there was a mouth. The Salaman's lips, like the rest of them, were stretched tight, making his human-like and yellow teeth seem bigger than they were. Stunned into helplessness by my own fear, I could do nothing but watch as the Salaman's jaw unhinged and stretched to an impossible size. He then reached for Timmy and grabbed him, picking him up just as easy as if he weighed nothing at all. The Salaman then shoved Timmy into his mouth whole, just like that, gone. Impossibly, my best friend was thrown into that awful ghoul's throat. I didn't even hear Timmy scream as the thing swallowed him. Tears were falling from my eyes freely as the Salaman closed his maw and turned his attention toward me as the insects began to retreat into the mirror behind him. Just before the Salaman disappeared behind the mirror, he smiled at me. I could feel his eyes that he did not have, burn into me. A buzzing sound filled my ears then, and I began to faint. Just before I hit the ground, I saw the Salaman duck his head back into the mirror and disappear. My mother arrived home from work at around 4 o'clock, and she found me on the bathroom floor, passed out with the door closed. When my mom woke me up, my head was hazy, and it took me a moment to recall what had happened, and it was hard to think with mom asking over and over if I was okay. But when I remembered, I became frantic, telling her something had happened to Timmy and he disappeared, but I left out the part about the Salaman. My mother looked at me like I was crazy. "Who's Timmy, dear?" she asked with a raised eyebrow. "Mom, you know who Timmy is. He's my best friend," I yelled. "Oh, you made a new friend. What do you mean he disappeared?" I started to tell her that Timmy had been my best friend all my life. I was going to tell her that he had stayed over almost all last year. But a sinking feeling in my stomach stopped me, and I pushed past my mother to the house phone. I was going to make a call to confirm my suspicion, but I hoped on hope I was wrong. I dialed Timmy's number and his mother answered. "Hello?" I took a deep breath and asked. "Hello, is Timmy there?" I asked. "I don't know any Timmy. Maybe you have the wrong number, sweetie."
Timmy's mother sounded much happier than I'd ever heard her before. It wasn't enough to stop the tears from forming in my eyes, but it did prompt the next question I asked. "Are you married?" I asked, knowing how silly it sounded, but I had to know. "No, but I don't see how that's any of your business. Does your mother know you're using the phone?" I didn't reply, I just hung up. I turned around and went up into my room. I dodged all of my mom's questions, and I went straight to bed. As I lay there, I thought hard about everything that had happened. I wondered if Timmy would want things this way. It was clear from the look of terror on his face that he had no idea he would have to pay such a heavy cost. I wondered if Timmy's sister knew about the part of the deal, if she left it out on purpose, or if she just didn't think it mattered because, after all, it was just a stupid poem. But the biggest question that I kept asking myself was, is Timmy still alive? I saw that thing swallow him whole, but was it possible, in whatever world he was in, that he was still there with the sallow man? I hoped not, but hopes are not. I got my answer when Monday morning came. In class, all I could do was stare at Timmy's empty seat, and it was making me sick thinking about it. I asked my teacher if I could use the restroom and was excused. I went straight to the sink once I made my way to the bathroom and turned on the tap. I turned the hot water on all the way and began to splash water onto my face. When I was done, I dried myself with a paper towel, and my eyes met the now fogged-up mirror in the bathroom. There, in the condensation, were three words. "Help me, Brandon."
Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
I hope you enjoyed The Sallow Man by J.J. Cheeseman, and you thought Bloody Mary was scary? Up next, we've got a scintillating story that guarantees you'll never look at scarecrows the same way again. But first, I'd like to tell you a bit more about tonight's second sponsor, Audible, and some really cool offers they've got lined up for you this holiday season. As you know, what with the Christmas music on the radio and the lights going up on lampposts all over the country, it's the time of year where everyone is thinking about thoughtful gifts. Well, I'd like to remind you, while you're in the midst of planning the very best way to put a smile on the face of your loved ones, not to forget about the most important person in your life, you. And I'd like you to think about giving yourself the gift of an Audible membership. Not only does this gift keep on giving all year round, but now's the best time to do it with a special offer for my listeners from the good folks at Audible themselves. Right now, for a limited time only, you can get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's more than half off the regular price. As always, your membership allows you access to an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers and more. Mysteries, thrillers, memoirs, motivational books, and more are just waiting to be heard. I've even got a couple up there. With Audible, you can choose 3 titles every month, 1 audiobook and 2 Audible originals you can't hear anywhere else. Not only that, but you can listen on any device, anytime, anywhere, at home or at the gym, on your commute, or on the go, wherever you go. You'll also enjoy easy book exchanges, rollover credits, and an audiobook library you keep forever. That's right, I said forever, even if you cancel. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. This holiday season, give yourself the gift of listening. And while you're at it, think about giving the gift of Audible to that someone special on your list, too. For more, go to audible.com/told, that's told, T-O-L-D, or text told to 500-500. Once again, give the gift that keeps on giving and tell Audible that Otis Gyre sent you by visiting audible.com/told. Once again, that's told, T-O-L-D, or text the word told to 500-500. Speaking of gifts, I've got my very own Nightmare Before Christmas for you, just waiting to be unwrapped. I'll give you a hint. It might not be a puppy, but that doesn't mean it doesn't want to play. Our third story this evening is entitled The Scarecrow's Hat by author Anil Pothaluri.
Sarah, wait up!
Thomas shouted as he scrambled down the old weathered road.
How many times do I have to tell you to go home, Thomas Crenshaw?
Sarah fumed, quickening her pace.
You gotta let me explain!
She stopped dead in her tracks at this, giving Thomas just enough time to catch up. When he was a few feet behind her, Sarah turned on her heels and looked at him in the eyes for the first time in a week.
Explain what, exactly?
Why you stood me up Saturday night, or why Mary Radley says she saw you sneaking out of Debbie Altman's window? It was more of an accusation than a question, but that didn't stop Thomas from trying his best.
Both! Sarah, I swear to you, it's all a big pile of lies. Mary Radley's just after attention, because no one ever pays her no mind.
Sarah seemed to think this over for a moment. She almost wanted to believe him, but no, it couldn't be that easy.
Oh, yeah? Where were you then, huh?
She challenged him with newfound skepticism.
My grandpa needed help out in the fields, that's all.
At sundown. Sarah's hazel eyes narrowed at the half-baked excuse.
Yeah, you thought foxes might be getting in the chicken coops. He had me stay up all night trying to catch him in the act.
If that's really true, then why didn't you just call to tell me? Sarah asked, the frustration clear in her voice.
I tried, but I couldn't get through to you. You know how hard it is to make calls out there.
I really wish I could believe you, Thomas. Sarah weakened again, the hurt seeping out through the cracks in her resolve.
Baby, please.
Thomas started taking her hands in his and squeezing them tightly.
Just tell me what I gotta do to make things right. I swear I'd do anything for you.
Sarah stiffened at the sudden touch, but she didn't pull away. She just stared up at Thomas as if the answers she was looking for were hidden somewhere in those soft brown eyes of his.
Anything?
Her voice was soft and timid now. The lion had been reduced to a mouse. Thomas smiled that perfect little smile that always got him out of trouble.
Anything, baby, you just name it.
Sarah pursed her lips and twirled her finger through her fiery red curls as she thought it over.
All right. I want the hat off this old scarecrow on the old abandoned Dupre farm.
Thomas's loving expression quickly turned to a look of confusion.
Of all the things, you want that dirty old scarecrow hat?
No one's ever done it before, and you know what people say about that place. If you can get it to me, that hat, it'll show me how devoted you are to me. Every kid in town will be talking about it.
Of course I can get it, it's just a scarecrow.
Maybe, maybe not. Sarah muttered. Thomas tilted his head at her curiously.
You believe in all that hocus-pocus?
Sarah crossed her arms in a huff, reminding Thomas why the request was being made in the first place.
Never you mind what I do or don't believe, Thomas. You just worry about getting me that hat. All right, I'm sorry.
Just bring it to school tomorrow and give it to me at lunch in front of everyone, Sarah exclaimed. That'll put an end to all this Debbie Altman talk. Dad explained it, all loud and clear. Sarah didn't really care about the hat or the scarecrow. She just wanted all the gossip to stop. And if there was anything that could make that happen, it'd be someone getting their hands on that damn hat.
All right, baby. I'll get it done. I love you, you know.
I gotta get home, Thomas. I'll see you around. Was all he got in response as Sarah left him alone on the empty old stretch of road. He sighed and started his walk off to the Dupre farm. Guilt welled up like a knot in his stomach. The truth was, he had indeed been unfaithful. He still loved Sarah, at least he thought he did, but he was eager and hormonal, and like many boys his age, he had needs and urges. Sarah wanted to do the proper Christian thing and wait, something Thomas had agreed with at first, but as time went on, he found this arrangement increasingly frustrating. Then Debbie came along, sweet, easy Debbie. She made everything so much better for a time. It was never serious, they both understood that perfectly. They'd sneak off and have their fun, and with his needs satisfied, Thomas was a much more agreeable boyfriend to Sarah. It went on like that for a month. Thomas was happy, Debbie was happy, and Sarah was happy too. That is, of course, until she, along with the entire school, found out what Thomas was doing. Now everything was so messy, and Thomas was beginning to realize what a mistake it had all been. He continued to think that fact over as he made his way to the old farm. It was a way he knew very well, actually. His grandfather's land was right next to the Dupre's. Thomas could remember spending many restless nights staring out of his bedroom window, wondering if that old scarecrow out there was watching him. But he wasn't a child anymore. Now he saw that scarecrow for what it was, straw and cloth and dust, nothing more. As Thomas finally made it to the small wooden fence that separated his family's land from the Dupre's, he found himself more worried about the possibility of a snake bite rather than any old scarecrow. The Dupre's land was truly an eyesore, an unruly jungle of grass and weeds sprung up from every inch of the property, the worst of it stretching to 2 feet in height. Thomas didn't want to think about all the different types of nasty critters that could be waiting in there for him. He reminded himself that he was doing this for Sarah, and with a big gulp of courage, he started to climb over the fence. Unfortunately, he only managed to get 1 foot onto the property before a strong, leathery hand grabbed him by the collar of his shirt with a rough, crackling voice ringing out from behind him. "Thomas!" The grandfather's boy shouted loudly, nearly sending Thomas jumping out of his own skin.
"What in the hell do you think you're doing, boy?"
The old man scolded as he pulled his grandson back over the fence. Thomas tried to fight, but despite his age, the old farmer was much stronger than he. He wriggled in vain as his grandfather dragged him into the house. Once inside, Thomas was finally freed from his grandfather's grip.
"I've told you time and time again to stay away from that land. How many more times do you need to tell them before they start listening?" "God dang it, I ain't a child no more!"
Thomas began shouting before his grandfather's hard stare shut him up.
"Then you ought to stop acting like one and don't you ever take the Lord's name in vain."
Thomas mumbled out an apology as he stared at the floor, unable to meet his grandfather's oppressive gaze.
"What were you trying to get over the fence?" "What's it matter?"
Thomas huffed.
"Boy, you better answer my question,"
the old man said coldly. Thomas knew that tone, and he knew better than to give any lip when his grandfather used it.
"I was going to try to get the scarecrow's hat,"
he admitted, finally meeting his grandfather's eyes. To Thomas's surprise, that cold stare turned to an expression he'd never seen before. It was a solemn look with tinges of fear and something more, something deeper. The old man kept buried inside.
"Grandpa?"
I was praying he wouldn't say that, but I knew it was coming. The old man answered in a defeated voice. Sit down, boy. Let's have a talk. Thomas followed his grandfather to the wooden table where they ate all their meals, and once they both sat down, his grandfather spoke again. Why do you want that hat, Thomas? There was no anger in his voice now, just concern. I messed things up real bad with Sarah, and she said giving her that hat, that's the only way I can make it right. Thomas was surprised by his own honesty. He hadn't wanted to tell his grandfather any of it, but it just seemed to spill out. Thomas's grandfather sighed and began rubbing his temples. I know how much you like that girl, Thomas, but you can't do that.
I have to.
Go talk to Sarah tomorrow. Find another way to make things right. I won't let you do that. I can't let you do that.
Why not? Why is everyone in this town so damn terrified of that dumb old scarecrow?
Thomas's voice peaked in frustration. Boy, how much do you know about that old farm? Just stupid bedtime stories to scare little kids. Sarah's mom told her one night that the scarecrow jumped off his post and gobbled up the Duprees in their sleep, and that he'll do the same to any children who don't mind their elders, Thomas scoffed. So you never did learn the real history of that place and that damn thing. That's my fault. I should have told you about it a long time ago. I guess I just didn't want to acknowledge it myself. Thomas stared at his grandfather quizzically. The promise of an explanation managed to lessen his rising temper. It all started with Virgil and Adeline Dupre. They were a Haitian couple that moved here from Louisiana. From what people say, they were kind, hard-working people. It was a different time, though, back when people didn't really take kindly to seeing colored folk owning land, let alone seeing them prosper because of it. That bitterness and disgust just festered and slowly turned to rage and hate until eventually something evil happened. One night, the townspeople came in their white hoods with their torches and their clubs. They dragged Virgil Dupre out of his home and they tortured him. Then they hung him from the oak tree beside his house. Adeline had been visiting family in Louisiana at the time, and when she came back, the only thing waiting for her was her husband's remains swinging from a branch. They never convicted anyone. The police turned their back on it all, and Adeline was inconsolable. Thomas's grandfather explained regretfully. The grief, anger, and fear ate all away at her until she just couldn't take it anymore. If the law wouldn't bring her justice, she'd get it another way. Unbeknownst to the rest of the town, Adeline Dupre practiced voodoo, and in her grief and rage, she started making that scarecrow. They say she stuffed it with talismans and mystical herbs, wrapped it in a cloth dipped in strange potions, and even made it a costume out of different scraps of Virgil's clothes. And once it was finished, she put it on a post in front of the house. She cut the throats of every last bit of livestock she owned at that scarecrow's feet, and with all that hatred and suffering and blood, they say she put a demon in that scarecrow. Now, when word got around that Adeline Dupre had been out there sacrificing animals and singing in a strange foreign language, people were up in arms. They swarmed the farm, planning to lynch Adeline just like her husband. They never laid a finger on her, though. They say that scarecrow sprung from its post and tore every last one of them up like an animal. Then it impaled their bodies on the branches of the oak tree Virgil was hanging by, all while Adeline sat on her porch and watched. The people that remained in the town never bothered Adeline after that. She stayed in that house, mad and alone, until she finally drank herself to death. The bank sold the land many times over, but all the owners either died or fled soon after. Eventually, people stopped buying and the land was abandoned. Thomas stared at his grandfather wide-eyed and slack-jawed. You really believe that load of horse shit? Thomas was flabbergasted. This was just absurd. Voodoo magic? A killer scarecrow? He felt like the only sane person in the town of gullible, superstitious fools. His grandfather just sighed and shook his head before continuing. I know. I thought it was nonsense when I was your age, too. Then one night I tried to steal that hat myself. Thomas's ears perked at this. What happened? The old man stared down at his clasped hands and took a shaky breath. I didn't ever want to have to tell anyone this story, especially you. But I can see it's something you're going to need to hear. It was me and three other people. The whole thing had been Peter Barnett's idea. He'd always been a troublemaker despite being the son of our high school principal. Peter's younger brother, Andy, tagged along wherever Peter went. There was also Carol Ann Dietz, a girl I was sweet on at the time. A faint smile spread across the old man's wrinkled lips as he remembered the girl from so long ago. I was really only going to impress her. We were all going to be the first kids in town to nab the scarecrow's hat. That's what we thought, at least. It was dark out when we all hopped the fence and started walking. Everything was normal for a while. Peter and Andy were walking ahead while I stayed in the back with Carol Ann. We were talking about school, joking with each other. And Carol Ann noticed something odd. It was quiet, dead quiet out there. No crickets, no toads, no nothing. And in a place as overgrown as the Dupree's land, it just didn't add up. It spooked Andy something fierce, but we all just tried to forget it. Eventually, after a good deal of walking and complaining, mostly on Andy's part, we made it to the Scarecrow's post. Thomas watched as his grandfather's eyes turned glassy, and his voice grew quiet and fearful as he continued. It was so unsettling up close. The thing was dressed in a moldy, dark green shirt. Ragged, dirty blue pants, and a tattered maroon shoulder cape. The getup looked like it belonged more on some New Orleans voodoo man than the scarecrow. It had such an unnaturally long and thin body, and its head, the thing's head, was a pale, ghostly white stuffed sack tied tight with rope that coiled around its inhumanely long neck. It had long, dirty straw for hair. The only facial features the thing had was a long, stitched smile and another set of stitches higher up on the head that almost looked like a single shut eye. And on top of that damn hat. It was large, a wide-brimmed hat that was the same maroon color as the cape with two big black feathers sticking out of the side. The worst thing about it, though, was the way it was posed. The post was shaped like a large cross. The scarecrow's arms were tied to it by barbed wire. Its head was resting on its shoulder like some sick mockery of the crucifixion. We all just stood and stared in awe and disgust at the thing, until Peter finally piped up and snapped us all out of it. The post was so tall that none of us could reach the hat on our own. So Peter had Andy climb on his shoulders to reach it while me and Carol Ann watched. That was fine by me. I didn't want to get any closer to that thing. I was just glad we were going to get the hat and get out of there. But just as Andy was about to reach it, he let out a terrible shriek and fell off his brother's shoulders, flat onto the ground. We all started cussing him out for scaring the life out of us when he started shivering and pointing at the scarecrow. And that's when we all saw it. The thing was staring at us with a big, bloody, red eye. The damn thing had an eye. It lifted its head off its shoulder with an awful cracking noise and just stared down at us with that single, piercing, red eye. Then it opened its mouth with a wet, tearing noise and took the shrillest, most bone-chilling breath of air I've ever heard in my life. It was as if this thing hadn't used its lungs in decades. The thing started to jitter and writhe on that post until two hands burst out of its sleeves. The thing didn't have human hands. They looked more like giant crow's feet. I can still remember the way it wriggled, those three sharp clawed fingers. Once it sprouted those hands, its back started to throb and pulse like its arms. Then a pair of big, feathery black wings burst out of the thing's back. None of us moved a muscle the entire time. You may think us stupid for not bolting the moment that thing started to move, but understand this. Until you've seen what I have, you'll never understand what that kind of terror does to your body. We were all paralyzed, and as much as our minds screamed for us to run, our legs was... they just wouldn't listen. All we could do was watch like the helpless things we were. As the barbed wire started to unravel and the monster dropped from its post, its body making more of those sickening cracks and pops as it stood, Andy managed to let out one more shriek that somehow freed us from our paralysis. The thing wrapped a large, clawed hand around the boy's head and leapt into the air, carrying Andy up with it. We were all in hysterics, Peter especially. He was screaming and crying, calling out Andy's name and begging for him back. Carol Ann was just mumbling to herself with this foggy look on her face, and all I can remember was screaming at the top of my lungs that we had to run. Eventually, the two of them realized I was right, so we ran as fast as we could. We didn't make it far before Andy's body fell from the sky in front of us. Every bone in his body looked broken, and there was just so much blood. Peter started throwing up then, and while he was doubled over, that thing just swooped down and landed right on him. I didn't stay to watch what happened to him. I just grabbed Carol Ann's arm, and we kept on running. We were so close I could just make out the wooden fence when Carol Ann's hand was yanked away from mine. I turned just in time to watch that monster drag her away. A pang of grief stabbed at the old farmer. His voice grew full of shame and regret as he forced himself to keep talking. For a moment, I thought about going back for trying to fight that thing and save Carol Ann, but I knew that was suicide. No, I did the less noble thing. I kept on running until I hit that fence. I remember climbing over it and landing on my hands and knees on the other side. And when I turned around, there was the thing, perched on the fence, like a gargoyle. I was sure this was it. The monster was going to rip me apart. But it didn't. It just sat there on the fence, staring at me with this single, bulging, hate-filled eye. Then it darted back towards the property. I managed to get to my feet just in time to watch it return to the fence with Carol Ann. She was alive, both her legs were broken. It dropped her a few feet away from the fence and just stared at me. She tried to crawl, but the thing just pulled her back if she got too far. She was sobbing and begging me to help her. I took a single step towards her, but then I saw the eagerness in that monster's eye. I understood what it was doing. It was trying to lure me back onto the property because it couldn't leave. I told Carol Ann I was sorry. Then I started stepping back. Once it knew I wasn't taking the bait, the scarecrow let out a wail like I've never heard before. It pounced on poor Carol Ann. It snapped both of her arms like twigs, and once she couldn't defend herself, it tore into her with those talons. I watched helplessly while that monster tore the flesh off her beautiful face, then plucked out her eyes. She was alive for all of it. She was screaming my name and begging more to help her. Then it took her tongue and she was quiet. Once she was gone, I watched it drag her body back towards the farmhouse. Tears welled in the old man's tired eyes. He stifled a sniffle as he wiped them away before finishing. The police found all three of their bodies impaled on the dead oak tree the next morning. I was so scared they'd pin it all on me. But there was never an investigation. People knew what happened, and like they had so many times before, they turned a blind eye to it. You can believe whatever you want, boy, but I know what I saw on the Dupre farm that night. What I've told you is the Lord's truth, And it's why you're forbidden from ever setting foot on that property. Thomas sat quietly, trying to process his grandfather's words. His head raced and his skeptical resolve started to waver, but only for a moment. It was quite the tale, but that's all it was, just a tale, meant to scare a child into behaving. Thomas wasn't a child, and he saw through his grandfather's tricks, even if he still didn't know the reasons for it. He assured his grandfather that he understood and would never set foot on the property again. Under the cover of night, while his grandfather slept, Thomas snuck out and crossed the fence onto the abandoned land. He made his way to the old farmhouse where the scarecrow waited. To Thomas's unease, the thing was just how his grandfather had described, right down to that unsettling pose. His grandfather had gotten a lot of things right, in fact, like the dead silence of the area. Thomas shook away the paranoid thoughts. There was a simple explanation for it all. His grandpa had indeed been on the farm, but he just chickened out, that was it. Satisfied with that explanation, Thomas began climbing the wooden post like a tree. The hat was nearly in his grasp when he saw it. A single, red, veiny eye with a pale, milky iris staring down at him. He fell from the post with a terrified scream. As he lay there on the ground, coughing and trying to catch his breath, he realized just how wrong he'd been, as the scarecrow's mouth, his stitched mouth, tore open into a large, nightmarish grin. Thanks again to today's sponsors, American Hysteria and Audible, for their support of this show. Don't forget, as a listener, for a limited time only, you can get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month, more than half off the regular price. Visit audible.com/told. That's told, T-O-L-D, or text told to 500500. Once again, that's audible.com/told, or text the word told to 500500. There's never been a better time to give the gift of Audible to yourself or your loved ones than this holiday season. So sign up today and see what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Thanks for joining me tonight for Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you like what you heard and would like to hear a premium extended edition of tonight's episode, which includes two more terrifying tales, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the Patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself on Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, where you can sign up for a season pass and get access to all 24 ad-free extended episodes from this season, or sign up as a patron for just $5 per month and get access to not just my show, but our network's audio archive of hundreds of previous releases, including premium versions of our other shows, such as the Simply Scary Podcast and Horror Hill. Not only that, but you'll be lending your support to this very program and help me continue bringing nightmares to life each and every week. Thank you very much for your support.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyrie. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyrie channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name, and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's otis@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.